It's always a good day when you look down on the schedule and see that David Baldacci is going to be on. He's a master storyteller. He is returning to his first female lead character, FBI agent Atlee Pine. His new thriller, Daylight, is out today. Pine's search for her sister, Mercy, clashes with military investigator John Puller's high-stakes case, leading them both deep into a global conspiracy from which neither of them will escape unscathed. This is the third in the Atlee Pine series, and it is absolutely terrific. David Baldacci is a global number one best-selling author and one of the world's favorite storytellers. It's always a pleasure to welcome him to our program. David Baldacci, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Well, it's good to have you. So what is it like to have a book released the same time as Barack Obama's?
I think it'll drive a lot of business to the bookshops and online retailers. So, you know, they'll pick up his book and maybe pick up mine, too. It'll be great. I'm looking forward to reading it.
It's a nice respite, certainly. His is 700 pages long, and yours is, you know, your typical great, driving, quick read, which I love. I love this character. I love this series, and I'm thrilled that that you are continuing with it. What brought you to this point initially of wanting to investigate Atlee Pine, as it were?
Yeah, you know, I've had other female characters in my series, not the lead protagonist, and I have a lot of respect for women who work in law enforcement and federal agencies, and I know it's difficult because a lot of those agencies are still very much a man's world, and there's even an organization called WIFL, which stands for Women in Federal Law Enforcement. I wrote about them in a King and Maxwell book, and I got a call from the head of the organization saying, "You're the first author to ever mention us in a book. Would you like to come and speak at our national convention?" So I did, and I'm in a ballroom with like 800 women, and all of them have guns. Never been that intimidated in my whole life, but it's just a great respect because I know that for them to be in those fields, they have to work twice as hard to get to the same level. And so that was sort of the impetus for an Atlee Pine character, showing how a woman could not only become an agent but thrive in the field, but do it her own way and on her own terms. And Pine is very much an individual. She doesn't want to be part of a big bureaucracy. Her bailiwick is out at the Grand Canyon. She's the only FBI agent out there. She doesn't work with a team. She works alone other than her assistant, Carol Blum. And that's the way she wants it.
The thing I find fascinating about this character is, I want to get to Carol in a moment because that's another one of my favorite characters. But Atlee is really fascinating because she has an inner drive, obviously. But talk about the impact that the relationship with her sister has in this drive as well.
Yeah, it's left a void in her life that really nothing can fill other than closure and the truth. So, I mean, for many years, she just didn't want to confront it. But then there came a time where her FBI career was sort of endangered by the fact that she can't get over her sister's disappearance, and she's been given an ultimatum by the Bureau, you know, figure out this personal part of your life, find out what happened to your sister, otherwise I don't think you have a future at the FBI. So this has driven her to confront something that I think she didn't want to confront for a long time, and now knows she has to. I mean, to lose a twin is a terrible thing. To lose a twin when you're both little kids and you almost die in the process and not knowing what happened, I think is just an unfathomable emotional sort of hole in your heart. And now this has become the driving force in her whole life to find out what happened to Mercy. She's been doing it now for three books, and in Daylight, a lot. I mean, I call it Daylight for a reason. There is a lot of daylight in this book for her, not only about what happened to her sister, and you find a great deal about what happened specifically to Mercy Pine, but Pine also finds out that most of her past that she just took as truth was totally fabricated, and a lot of her history was totally made up. And that just rocked her like nothing ever had before in her life. And at the end of the novel, you sort of see that. But I think that she earned that response to what happened. And to find that so many people that she had cared about who thought that they cared for her had lied to her all these years. It was just she had reached her absolute limit.
This book follows up, of course, A Minute to Midnight, and I'm curious as to what it has been like for you to map this out of giving us a little bit of information with each book about Mercy, about Atlee, and how you ultimately kind of plan for not only the book that you're writing, but down the road of how this will unfold.
Yeah, it's, you know, part of it is comforting because I know the characters, and but part of it you sort of are on tenterhooks too because I had the same thread of investigation running through multiple books. So I'd never really had done that before. You also have this fear, you know, of making a mistake, of screwing up, of not laying something out that you needed to lay out and you didn't, and how do you get around that issue? So it's almost, it becomes almost like a jigsaw puzzle to the extreme to make sure that everything is there that you needed and it's in the exact right place where you need it to be. And sometimes it's not, and then you have to have a workaround. I don't map everything out in advance. I let the stories grow organically, which is, you know, can be problematic when you have so much specificity that you need to have in each novel to carry through the whole story going forward. But I've managed it so far. But I have to say that it really keeps me on edge, which I think is a good thing. I think the best writing comes from writers when they feel like they're up against it. They're up against the wall. They're not sure if they can actually rise to the challenge. It's almost like, you know, if you haven't done something before. If you piloted a Cessna, and then now all of a sudden they've asked you to take the helm of a Gulfstream, a twin engine Gulfstream, and you may be able to fly it, you may feel okay, but you also feel like I'm right at the edge. I'm right at the edge of my competency, and can I pull this off? And what does that make you do? It makes every fiber of your being focused like you've never focused before. And I feel like with each book, I've tried to achieve that same level of focus. Because at the end of the day, when you feel like you're back against the wall, I think it's when you do some of your best work.
Is that because that's what journalists will often say of feeling that way of writing on a deadline, of having that of, okay, but I have to do this and I have to do it by tonight at 7. That you just, you feel that it's in you, that it's bursting to come out.
Yes, it is. You know, it's very much the same way. My sister was a journalist for a long time, and I know sort of the lifestyle that she had. She was always living and dying by the deadline, and she had to get everything out in a hurry and to make sure all the facts, you know, that people needed to know about were in that story. And with, you know, with fiction writing, again, getting out of your comfort zone, and I've always felt like, and I had the advice of a screenwriter who I won 2 Academy Awards, Bill Goldman, who wrote the screenplay for Absolute Power. He said, you know, the first time a writer thinks they know what they're doing is when they lost it, they should just hang it up. He said, the thing about being a really good writer is realizing that you never know what you're actually doing, minute to minute, and just responding to that. And if you respond to it well, he said, you're going to have a career.
And a career you have. I wanted to talk a little bit about Carol Blum, Attlee's sidekick, if you will, and started in the first book as a secretary, and really comes out of nowhere, and suddenly, bam, is this amazing, fierce, loyal, and endearing character. Was that a surprise for you, or is that sort of always in the plan?
It was, you know, partly not a surprise, but it was a surprise too. I mean, again, I kind of let my characters feel themselves out, you know, and how high can they rise? Are they going to hit a certain level and stop, or are they going to have more in the tank? And Carol has surprised me, you know, what I felt like plausibly I could do with her. You know, I built her up as a mother of 6. So if you're a mother of 6, nothing on God's earth will ever faze you. Nothing will ever surprise you. And you've handled everything a human being could reasonably called on to handle. So then with that background, and I knew that she would be fiercely devoted to Pine, who she cares deeply for. It would always be a woman who would tell another woman exactly what they needed to hear, not what they wanted to hear, but what they needed to hear, even if they didn't want to hear it. And that was her role, you know, sort of be a mentor, a maternal guidance, a friend, and also a professional colleague. I mean, Carol's been at the Bureau for almost 40 years. She's seen great agents and bad agents. She's seen good investigations. She's seen crappy investigations. So in some ways, she's more experienced than actual agents are about how things are supposed to work. And I allow her finally to bring all that to bear in this novel, where she comes out and she's actually more than just a friend. She's sort of a fellow operative with Attlee and is part of the investigation, and really helps her and shows that she's got a lot of pluck and a lot of courage.
Mm. It's very refreshing to see an older woman as you know, just a kick-ass character.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And it's much like, you know, when you see, you know, an older actor in a film who, like, aren't getting the parts they used to get, but when they're given an opportunity, they lay the rest of the cast to waste.
Right.
And all you want to do is just follow them on every scene.
David Baldacci's latest is Daylight. So let's talk about this book in particular, where Atlee Pine goes up against John Puller. Talk about that dynamic and what ultimately, a little bit about the story you're looking to tell here.
Yeah, so I'd lay that Easter egg back in A Minute to Midnight, where she mentioned having met John Puller and worked on an investigation, and he had been a mentor and a good guy. So I knew when I laid that Easter egg that in the follow-up book, I was going to bring those two together. And I didn't waste any time with it. So in the very first chapter, they literally run headlong into each other. And Puller is investigating a guy at Fort Dix who might be running a drug operation out of that facility. That's Army, and so that's right in his bailiwick. Pine is trying to find the same guy because he might be the grandson of the man who Pine believes kidnapped Mercy Pine 30 years ago from their home in Georgia. So those two investigations collide. And what turns out is that Pine now is helping Puller in his investigation, trying to find out about this drug operation that morphs into something far bigger. And at the same time, Puller is helping Pine try to figure out and find what happened to Mercy Pine. So it was almost like it was two parallel investigations, but they had connections between them. So it was, I've described it as being like a spine that has bone spurs growing out of it, because you have to, you know, as you lean forward and you're doing your, you know, you're typing on your computer or looking at your phone, and your bowling ball head gets heavier and heavier, and your spine's like, wait, you know, we can't support this. And they have to dig out bone spurs like roots in the ground to sort of bring you back. I had to make sure that this parallel investigation also had hyperconnectivity between the two investigations, because everything that happened on one side would have impact on the other side as well. So it was really much, very much of a hybrid. I call it parallel, but it really wasn't. You know, it was parallel and connected, which was a challenge for me. But again, a challenge is a good thing. So you sort of rise to the occasion. And I named it Daylight just because, you know, there's a lot of revelations that I talked about that she finds out, not just about Mercy, but about herself personally. And it really rocks her world. And I knew that this was going to happen in this third book. So a lot of the stuff had been building in the first two books. She'd found out tangentially this information, that bit of information about her past. It really all comes to a head in this one.
I've been asking authors and storytellers this question over the last several weeks, and I'm somewhat fascinated by it because the answers are so varied. But how has being in a pandemic impacted your writing, or if it has at all?
I have to say that over the course of the last winter, like from January to May, I've never been so productive in my life. I actually wrote two books simultaneously. I wrote Daylight, and 2 weeks at a time, I'd be working on Daylight, and then I would work on a sequel to One Good Deed, which is set in 1949. Mm-hmm. So I had my little time machine going, zipping back and forth every 2 weeks between those two, and I basically wrote those two books at the same time and finished them together within, like, you know, a six-month period. And I think part of it was because a lot of my time that I thought I was going to be out on tour during the spring and all that was obviously, you know, obliterated. None of that happened. But I think, too, that during a pandemic, I don't know, things get weird and odd, and you can allow yourself to be immersed in everything that's going on around you, as far as all the bad news about the pandemic, which I did to a certain extent because I crave information and knowledge. And not only did we have a pandemic, we had a presidential election, and I'm a very political person, so I was all over that as well,
right,
checking all the databases and websites and all that stuff for information and driving myself and everybody else around me crazy. But it was very productive for me for that, you know, 6 month period where I was laser focused. And I don't know if I was laser focused because there was so much bad news happening all around us and nobody was sure of whether we would ever get a handle on this pandemic and whether people were just going to keep dying by the thousands as they still are today. But I knew the one thing that I was not going to write about any type of a communicable disease. That was for damn sure. That was not going to appear in any of the stuff that I was writing, because that would be the last thing that I would want to read about, because that touched too close to home in that regard. And people, you know, with books like mine, people want to escape from situations right. They're currently in. And so I didn't want to take them to that bad place in my books.
Well, the new book is an absolute delight. It is called Daylight. It is an Atlee Pine thriller, and it is just out today. David Baldacci, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I so enjoy our conversations. Best of luck with the new book.
thank you very much. I enjoyed it, too. I hope to talk to you again.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much. Again, David Baldacci returns with Daylight. The book is now out from Grand Central. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.